Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few short minutes, right after an update on the market. So let's get started, shall we, Al?
Let's do it.
Let's shall. Hey, gold had a nice little turnaround. I thought, oh, boy, they were going to hit it again. Dipped below 1,200, 1,197 on the low. 1,212, currently up $1.80. Same thing with silver, down off the low, 1,656, basically unchanged, down 0.01. Platinum was down $2 at 1,176. And you have palladium down $3 at $782. The USDX today is trading down 0.03 at 94.04. Crude oil got hit today, down 0.201, but still above 50 at 51.52. And the market reports today, we have the Dow, 17 points to the downside, 18,029. The NASDAQ is up 7 at 49.06, closing in on that 5,000 level. And the S&P, basically unchanged, 2,099. The 10-year yield, it popped. It was higher, and it dropped after the Fed came out with their little meeting today about the raise in rates. 10-year yield, 2.07%, 0.08 down. Euro, 1.14. And that's pretty much it in the nutshell, Al.
I'm just curious, are Raisin Rights anything like Raisin Bran?
Raisin Rights. Okay. Maybe.
All right.
I got some. You want to buy some?
Yeah, sure. Send me a box.
You want a box of those?
Sure.
Let's see if Wendy Wilson is on the line with us. Wendy.
Hello, Melody and Al. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Staying warm. Snowing here. North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But the big chill is going to keep us going. We're going to talk about, get this, the adult vaccination schedule. Have you heard about this?
Nope, I haven't. And I can... See, just from the description of it that you sent over here, a couple sentences is all. I mean, the idiots, they just won't leave us alone, will they?
No, actually, this is a proposal that's been in the works with the National Vaccine Program since 2010. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Vaccine Plan is a proposal report that they put together in 2010 that should run through 2020. It's their 10-year implementation plan, basically, is what it is. And I read the entire document, which was several pages, and they go through and they list all the ways in which they're going to accomplish this and even get you to comply voluntarily. So I thought we'd discuss that today.
How do they get you to volunteer?
Well, the same way they get you to pay income tax, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's got more to do with trickery than it does to do with real volunteers. Well, yeah, I'd like a shot.
Well, I'm going to give you this report today, and so everybody can be informed and plan accordingly. So, well, these agencies are planning that they want to secure our health best interest, and they've actually been pretty bold in their report and announced their intent to apply leverage for compliance through the Affordable Care Act. Okay, so the National Adult Immunization Plan, called NAIP, will make sure that every adult is covered by government-controlled insurance, and compliance will guarantee whether you qualify for any insurance benefits. So I'm sure that if you don't comply, just like everything else, you may be fined, become unemployed, you may be risking custody of your kids. Any measure of arm twisting as an incentive could be instigated by these folks. So they want to promote this effort and work with state and federal agencies together to supposedly protect the health best interest by vaccinating every adult over 18. This is just something, that you're just going to have to look at as it comes into fruition, because it's going to be – they're stepping up the pace because they're really frustrated that they haven't implemented half of what they wanted to when they put the proposal together. So they're going to get a little bit more aggressive with this. And what they're going to do is the agencies want you to volunteer to feel good about your contribution to becoming a vaccinated adult on a regular basis. So they're going to roll out these campaigns, Al and Melanie, and they're going to target your guilt, and they're going to apply peer pressure, okay? So there's going to be a push for community demand for your adult immunizations, and it's probably going to be based on these bogus reports from the health agencies and the stockholders that vaccines actually prevent disease. So they are going to use possibly even aerosol vaccination technology. I think we've talked about that before, in order to cut down on cost and vaccinate large numbers of people in just a matter of breaths, basically. So which vaccines, you may want to ask me, which vaccines do they want you to get, Al?
Which vaccines do they want me to get, Wendy?
Well, they're probably not going to check your blood titers to see if you don't need a certain vaccine, but they on their list, they got the pneumococcal or the pneumonia vaccine, of course your flu influenza vaccines, the shingles vaccine, hepatitis A and B, herpes zoster, papilloma, HPV, and the advisory committee on the immunizations, they've recommended that adults receive 13 different vaccines from the age of 18 up. And if you don't have your boosters from your childhood vaccines, like let's say you missed your measles, your mumps, your rubella, and so forth, they even have a category in the report, which there's a hot link to this article in the newsletter, by the way, which shows that adults that have not got their childhood vaccines the way they should have, there's a catch-up vaccinations column. So they're going to check. And if you can't produce information that you've been vaccinated with those, then you're going to get those as well. So
maybe they should vaccinate people with extra large needles so they leave a mark and you'll be branded. And for the rest of your life, there'll be no doubt. Well, yeah, I can see that.
Well, really, Yeah, the goal is to have adult vaccinations at the 90% compliance percentile, which is basically where the childhood vaccinations are reported to be. So the agencies are really making vaccines their core part of a what they're calling a well care plan. Now, according to Pharma Research, there's 300 new vaccines in development, which could very easily be added to your adult vaccination schedule. Currently, the pharmaceutical companies are working on 170 vaccines for infectious disease, 102 for cancers, and 8 for neurological disorders. So,
Let me ask you this. Are they working on this simply so they can make a dollar? I mean, if we've got a new 140, 50, 60, however many new vaccines coming down the pipe, is this to protect the people or to make a dollar? That's question number one. And question number two is this. If I recall correctly, you've talked about the vaccines that we give children in the past. And I may not be remembering correctly, but in the back of my mind, I have the idea that if they take the vaccines as children, they don't tend to develop their own natural immunities. Is that true or false?
Right, exactly. Well, Dr. Anthony Morris, he's not with us. He died last year in 2014, but he used to be the chief medical counsel over the FDA's vaccination division. And he kind of blew the whistle in 1976 on the Phil Donahue show when he said he's been studying vaccines for 10 years in his position, and there was absolutely no scientific evidence to support the claims. It actually weakens the immune system. And, of course, Dr. Carley, her impression is that vaccines are the cause, the instigator for all internal medicine diseases. So I think it's a way to get you to pay for your vaccine, of course, and then, of course, to keep a steady stream of patients with all kinds of diseases they get down, they develop down the road because they have a weakened immune system.
Well, that's part of my point, I guess, or at least part of my question. If they give you enough diseases to weaken your immune system when you're a child, does that create the requirement that people have to have more vaccines as an adult to fend off the diseases that they don't have a natural immunity for or natural ability to defend against? Do you see what I'm doing? They're disabling you, and now the only way you can survive is you need your fix.
Well, if you are any virologist knows who works in the industry knows that vaccines are total fraud. Basically, because the way that your immune system works to manufacture a protection or an antibody against an infectious pathogen is it has to come through the system in a normal way, whether you breathe it in, ingest it in, absorb it in. And there's all these little checkpoints that your immune system gets chemical messages from your body on. And there's certain defenses, like, for instance, on your skin, Al, there's all these acids. Now, if the pathogen is able to survive the acid and penetrates the skin and gets into the blood system, it normally travels to the gut. And then there's all these defense mechanisms there as well. So what happens is the immune system is getting information chemically from all these checkpoints. And by the time it gets to its full-blown capacity to be a threat to you, the body's starting to manufacture an antibody for it. Now, if it is injected into you artificially, which is what is known as an artificial infection, that's what a vaccine is, it bypasses all those check balances, and virologists will tell you the immune system ignores it when it's in the blood because it thinks it's supposed to be there. It doesn't create an antibody defense for it.
So essentially the needle bypasses the defense mechanisms you have in your skin or you have in your gut or you have in your lungs. And
right.
Now it's directly in your system, and it's kind of like illegal aliens, isn't it?
Yeah.
They don't even have to get a green card. We'll just inject them into the body.
Right, and there's a lot of virologists.
Are there any good vaccines? I mean,
no,
when you look at the polio vaccine.
No, actually, if you look at the history of and the vaccines, and even virologists have noticed this, the correlation was a lot of these childhood diseases, and vaccines came out after there was a decline in these diseases. So the improvement in sanitary conditions, the improvement of getting more fresh fruits and vegetables year-round, improved immune system function, okay, improved health overall. And this is what actually prevented a lot of spread of diseases. It wasn't vaccinations at all. And there's lots of literature out there that people can, you know, get on the internet and look for. I know Dr. Carley lists a bunch of that on her website if you want to research it yourself, but I have actually talked with virologists that have confirmed that basically the reason vaccines are the best guarded secret in allopathic medicine is because it creates an endless supply of patients to the medical industry.
That's an extraordinary claim, and it's the sort of thing, if it's true, then we have a lot to be angry about.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, there's no way that they're going to be able to vaccinate everybody. I said, well, they're going to get you to comply. Mm-hmm. And they list the objections. They know already what your objections are. There's enough people even in the medical field that object to vaccines because they suspect they're not beneficial for health and they actually are harmful. So they're skeptics within modern medicine, and that's why they're fighting it when their employers at the hospital want them to get vaccinated. So, well, what they're going to do basically is they're going to get the big employers out there to have policy within their companies where they have a healthy environment policy, and they'll host these in-house clinics where they'll vaccinate the employees. And the employees will be, well, they'll feel pressured to comply, and I'm thinking there's probably going to be some incentives for businesses to do this and maybe for employees to also roll up their sleeves. Now, there'll probably be positive incentives to begin with, but then I think there'll be punishments down the road if you do not. So,
they'll fire you.
If
right.
They'll make for an unpleasant workplace environment. Because most of the people, if they believe they need vaccines and they know, because you've done this in public in a way where they know you didn't get your vaccine, you're the one who's going to be deemed to be responsible or at least exposing all of them to certain dangers, and they're going to want you out of that job.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, they even list in their report in that hot link that's going to be in this week's newsletter. They even list the complications for the people that are going to be the vulnerable ones. They actually call them that. These are going to be people who get the vaccines that aren't going to do very well. So patients with heart disease, stroke, diabetes, or other chronic health conditions, or are frail elderly will be actually monitored more closely by these folks because they want to track their sickness and their mortality rate. So pregnant women are also included and should be monitored. Actually, this is going to be the largest epidemiological study in the history of modern medicine, to be honest. And pharmaceutical companies will also distribute large volume of these no-fault vaccines because that's what our government's made these because you can't sue.
Sue the manufacturer.
Right. And so, and they have this
can
big data.
Can you sue the
hub.
People who don't get the vaccine?
I'm sorry, say that again?
We can't sue the manufacturer, but can we sue the people who don't get the vaccine and might arguably be deemed to be carriers? Do they have any protection?
I'm sure you could. I mean, there's bakers and there's print shops and everything that are being sued because they don't want to participate in a homosexual marriage, and so they're losing everything being sued. So I'm sure the courts will be more than happy to hear that argument, you know?
World is going mad. Do you think they'll be able to pull it off?
I think if enough people start, standing up, and I think we're going to have to stick together because I know there's going to be a lot of people with children that'll worry that they'll take the children away and vaccinate them anyway if they make a stink. So it's going to take the whole neighborhood to stand with families like that and just say no, you know?
Well, there's another point. You talked about perhaps inhaling the vaccine.
Right, in two breaths you could be vaccinated.
It would be easy to give that to children. They wouldn't even know what was going on. Just go stand in this little room, Sally, and we're going to be there, and we'll take you out in just 60 seconds. You put Sally and six other kids in there, and they get the vaccine, they don't even know it.
Yeah, the powdered vaccinations probably will be very popular because they're cheaper to make. They're easy to vaccinate large numbers of folks without really their consent. So I imagine that'll be in the mix somewhere. Now, they're also going to send out a Healthy People 2020 annual national survey, and this is going to be their adult immunization dashboard on their progress. So you're going to probably get that from your healthcare providers, and who knows if you don't want to fill it out. I'm not sure what the consequences are going to be on that. But they're tracking everything, and I think people need to be aware of that, and get ready for the new culturally appropriate advertising to different groups to promote this, to encourage this. They know that people who get text messages will respond and get vaccinated. They've already did the math on that. So watch your phones, your tweets, your Facebook, because they're going to roll this out and convert adults into this multiple frequent vaccination adult schedule, because they know if they get you in compliance, then you'll make sure your kids get vaccinated too.
I understand. Wendy, give us a little contact information.
Awesome. Well, more information at thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com, or call toll-free at 866-229-3663.
Wendy, thank you. We look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedarstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. See, Melody, I got it right, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Huh?
Gee, all right. Gold star for you.
A real gold star?
A real gold star.
Ooh.
I have a pen here that has some gold flakes in. I'll send you a gold pen.
All right. I'll take it, I guess. all right. So what's next, Melody?
Hey, I have a special. We're going to continue yesterday's special, because even though there was a little weakness in the gold and silver markets, prices didn't change. and another good sign that these markets are going to, at least they're firming up. And I think, again, we'll see fluctuations between the 1,200 and 1,300 for a little bit more longer. But 1,954 for a Mint State 64 St. Gaudens, $20 gold piece certified by NGC or PCGS. We're also going to include 90% 50-cent pieces, Walking Liberties, $30 face value. And that total package that includes the $20 gold piece and the $30 face value of 90% 50-cent pieces, $1,954. And again, the prices on the walkers when doing comparisons, the value, very good pricing along with the Mint State 64 St. Gaudens. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter.
All right. I've got an article here from... Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention today that the minutes today, the Fed's revealed that, you know, and it's really so funny because we know they're not going to raise rates. We pretty much know that. And you know, they were focusing in on June as far as raising rates. And the minutes revealed that they were concerned about the impact, of course, on the financial markets about dropping that famous word. Do you know what that word is, Al?
It wasn't patience, was it?
Yes, they're concerned of what's going to happen if they drop that patient from their communications when describing how long they were going to wait before raising rates. But they pretty much have eliminated June as far as the first rate increase. So we'll just have to, you know, see again what their communications are released here in the near future. Unemployment, they're still concerned about wage growth, unemployment, even though unemployment has declined. And, of course, inflation still remains below their 2% target. The Greek government, they're set to ask the European creditors to extend a 240 billion euro international loan agreement, but without the deep spending cuts and income reductions from the country's austerity program. So you just give us more money, and you know, we're just going to keep on spending. So you know, we'll have to see how that goes. You know,
it's worked wonderfully well in this country for welfare recipients, illegal aliens.
Yes, it has.
As long as we keep giving them money, they're happy.
But their program, their bailout program, expires the 28th of this month.
Yep.
Again, you know, there's worries. Pardon?
11 days.
11 days. And so, again, there's the same worries that we've heard all year and, you know, 2 years ago that what happens if there is a failure to extend it, that they may opt out of the euro and damage the global, the potential damage to the global economy.
I kind of doubt that the Greek by itself, they'll damage, they'll have any significant effect even on the European Union. They are more of an irritation. $315 billion is only a couple of months of the new quantitative easing that they have proposed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works out to about 3 months of the new quantitative easing. That's not a big deal.
No.
Right? But the significance is what happens if they let Greece off the hook for essentially a lousy $315 billion, if you can say a lousy $315 billion. They let them off the hook for a couple hundred billion.
Mm-hmm.
Is Italy going to demand to be let off the hook? How about France? How about Spain? How about Portugal? How about Ireland? How many other countries are going to demand that? It's the contagion potential that I think is animating the European concern with Greece right now. They're saying, if we give these guys a break, everybody's going to want one.
Yeah, but you know what? I agree. You know, you might have that contagion to these other countries, but it wouldn't be immediate.
No.
It'd certainly be a longer term.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's going to happen between now and then? And the big question, I think, is what are the derivatives tied to it? Is there just enough? Because Europe has derivatives coming out of London is more than what's coming out of the U.S. So if they're tied to any of that or any of those bonds and debts, is that enough to start that first domino to go? I don't know. But, you know, is that their bigger concern? But certainly no one talks about derivatives.
Well, we talk about derivatives.
No one talks about derivatives, but that's never in their list of concerns.
And it is interesting because we've been warned about derivatives. I'll bet you it's 10 years we've been hearing warnings about derivatives. Now, they haven't broken loose yet. And it's kind of surprising that we haven't had a real problem with derivatives. It makes me wonder if they're not just buttoned down and protected and concealed, or is the fear exaggerated? I don't think the fear is exaggerated, but it is surprising. It's probably been a decade that people have been warning, bomb in the financial markets are derivatives, and yet nothing's really happened that's been exposed to the public, at least.
Well, I think the 2008, the problem that during that situation, that problem, I think that had a lot to do with derivatives.
They didn't talk about it.
They didn't talk, and they're not going to talk about it, but I think that had a lot to do with it. And certainly that's a bad – well, it's kind of difficult to – and you could certainly – if you're looking to build confidence and you talk about quadrillion, that should scare the – that could certainly diminish confidence in a
what's a quadrillion, Melody?
What's a quadrillion?
It's like that joke about Bush. Somebody told him that the Brazilians were coming. Brazilian troops in Iraq or something. And Bush says, "How many are in a Brazilian? How many are in a quadrillion?" It's the same thing. I don't know if it even makes sense anymore. How long has it been? We've even had the word quadrillion has been in our vocabulary. I mean, yeah, it's been available to scientists who calculate how many miles there are between galaxies or whatever. There have been people, science deals with quadrillions. It used to be a billion was a lot of money.
Well, to think
that billion is, it's just chump change. That's nothing.
Well, to think that now we have a company, a corporation, that's almost valued at a trillion.
And we're talking about Apple.
We're talking about Apple. So, when was the last time you talked about a corporation being valued at a trillion?
Well,
so these numbers are just becoming, and how huge can they become?
And not only how huge can they become, how much power can the corporation begin to exert?
Yeah.
For example, Apple is talking about creating its own automobile. And it'll probably be one that runs on GPS, and you don't need a driver, and the vehicle will just take you around, just plug in wherever you want to go, and it'll take you wherever you want, wherever you'd like. This is Apple. They make computers, and they're starting to make automobiles. I can understand it. The automobile will have a computer in it. It becomes really a package for your computer. We're going to put it in a car instead of just a regular box that you put on your desk or whatever. But when we talk about Apple having $1 trillion, or at least a net worth of $1 trillion, we're saying that Apple, that corporation, is bigger than most states and probably bigger than most of the nations in the world in terms of net worth. And you really do have to sit back and think, what are we going to do with this? Is this just, isn't that interesting? Or is this a situation where we are going to see where corporations become fiefdoms, all right? Where people, whoever is running that corporation, can go to war with other corporations, or maybe nations, or whatever.
Nations, yeah, countries. Yep.
I mean, do you really trust corporations, any corporation, to wield $1 trillion? Is that a reasonable? Is it reasonable for people to trust corporations to do that? Because lifeblood is money. They don't care about rights. They don't care about human or the survival of the people of a nation. It's all about the bottom line. Do we want corporations that have a net worth of $1 trillion? And it's not, this is something to be concerned about. I don't have an answer for you per se, but long run, I don't know. Again, talk about living in interesting times.
Is that the wave of the? I mean, is that the future?
Well, no doubt, it's the wave of the future.
Yeah, I mean, you can have Apple going in there and scooping up grease.
Yeah, well, you're right.
All you folks just work for Apple.
Yeah. I'm a citizen of Apple. Are you a citizen of the state
citizen
of Texas?
Of Apple.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Citizen of the United States of America? No. What are you a citizen? I'm a citizen
Apple.
Of Apple. Oh, wow, yeah. You know.
Well, they created it with all those compounds. Remember, they started building all these little cities within themselves. We have that already here in California, where they have businesses that just cater to those who work in these computer companies in Silicon Valley and so mm-hmm. forth, outside of San Francisco. And they don't do business with folks that are, you know, that come in from the outside. So, I mean, it is almost their own little...
They act as if they were Sharia. Mm-hmm. It's a no-go zone here.
No-go
Not based
zone.
On your religion. It's based on your corporate affiliation.
Hey, yeah. We have a caller.
Let's hear what they have to say. Who are we talking to?
Joseph from Georgia.
Oh, Joseph.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Yep, we're here.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yep. Yeah. On that vaccine stuff, well, a lot of people's waking up, but a couple months back I heard a previous interview on somebody else's program with Dr. Stan Monteith, and you know him and his reputation and how all of his knowledge, and he just come, you know, he give reasons why, but he just come out and said vaccines, what they're putting in them, they're designed to reduce the population, and that's all I got. So there you go.
Well, all right, Joseph. Thank you.
Joseph.
We appreciate your call, and we've all heard.
Welcome,
I mean,
bye.
Thank you, Joseph.
Mm-hmm, bye bye. We've all heard that before from other sources. There are at least conspiracy theories that suggest that the viruses certainly contain contaminants, maybe contain poisons, maybe contain, you know, substances that are going to create lifelong adverse reactions or vulnerabilities. How can we prove it? How do we know? It's hard. If we get the proof that this is going on, then someone needs to go after everyone who works in the pharmaceutical industry responsible for producing these vaccines. If they are known to produce long-term health hazards, then everybody from vice president on up, all the scientists, charge them with treason and at least jail them for the rest of their lives if they're found guilty.
I think perhaps what makes some people confused is I know people who get vaccines every year.
Yep.
They don't seem to be affected one way or another. They don't get
sick.
You're
talking about the flu vaccine.
And yeah, the flu vaccine. And you know, they're elderly. And yet I do know some elderly folks who've gotten the flu shot and they fell ill and they won't ever get another one. So you see both sides.
Yeah,
what concerns me is what's coming. And I mentioned to you during the break, the push that I've seen on mainstream media for these vaccinations for everyone as a federal mandate. And that there, you know, waivers will no longer be allowed to keep your children from getting these vaccinations, that they mustn't be included. Just like Wendy said, you go into a job and you'll get canned if you don't get these vaccinations. The push to me is, I don't remember seeing anything quite so strong as getting these vaccinations pushed.
What
through.
You're talking about is there's a rising political tide.
Yes.
We're saying you need to be vaccinated and you need to be vaccinated and vaccinated, and not just the children, but the adults, the grandparents, and everybody needs. And we're not just talking about the flu shots. We're talking about vaccinations for a host of diseases at a time when much of the public flat out doesn't trust the government. You know, this would be a non-issue, largely, if most of the people in this country trusted the government. But we got a lot of people who just flat out don't trust the government. They actually believe, right or wrong, they actually believe that the government is allowing vaccines to be administered that will shorten our lives. Now, that may be just a crazy conspiracy theory, but regardless, if we're going to address this problem, one of the first things we need to do is not talk about vaccines. We need to talk about how does government restore public trust? And it doesn't look like it's going to happen as long as we have Barack Obama in the White House who thinks he can do anything he wants to do just because he's president. And it's not going to happen while we have Congress that allow illegal aliens and even ultimately encourage illegal aliens to come into this country. They won't protect our borders. And it's not, therefore, unreasonable to distrust the government. The government says, oh, yeah, we're here to help you. Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the interest in the interesting times, and that's where we are, in interesting times. We're going to take a break for some more commercials. Melody and I will be back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just have one comment in from Murray. He says, have you heard the latest lunacy out of our idiot vice president? Apparently, illegal aliens reduce extremism in the country. And the United States must ensure that immigrants are fully included in the fabric of American society to prevent violent ideologies from taking root at home. This is what Vice President Joe Biden said Tuesday as he opened up a White House summit on countering extremism and radicalization.
You know, if Mr. Biden, if he's going to ensure that they're incorporated in our society, does that mean they have to learn English, or does it mean they can maintain their own culture and their own language and just come up and set up essentially little colonies here and there that are perhaps, let's say, Mexican? I mean, if you're going to be incorporated into the society, it seems to me you have an obligation to learn the society's language. You have an obligation to embrace this society's culture. You do not have an obligation, and perhaps not even a right, to try to impose your culture or extend your culture within our country. And whether they have a right to try to do so, we all have, in a sense. My culture is not necessarily the same precisely as anyone else's. There's, you know, it might be that you and I and the people in the audience, we would all agree on 80% of what constitutes the culture that we could call the American culture. We might agree to 80% of it, but there might be 20% for you and 20% for me and 20% for other people where we said, well, I see it this way and you see it a different way and I see it a third way. All right? But there's a problem with bringing people in and even changing our government forms to where they work in other foreign languages. There's a problem here that is dangerous to this country because it offsets and diminishes the strength of our own culture. And this is not a small thing. Our culture brought this nation to the point where it was the world's most prosperous and most powerful. And that is a function of our culture, our values. And what they want to teach is, oh, no, you have to respect other people's cultures that come from countries, again, that are largely running around on wooden wheels unless they can import them from some other country. And we're supposed to respect their culture. I don't respect it. I think it's like we're saying, oh, I respect somebody who graduated from fourth grade. Right? I'm going to show them the same respect that I show to someone who graduates from college. Well, I understand everyone is entitled to a measure of self-respect, but in most instances, people who quit school when they were in fourth grade for whatever reason are not going to make the same level of productive contribution to this society that we're likely to expect from someone who graduated from college. This goes to the concept of culture. It goes to the concept of values. These are not just, oh, who cares? Let's put on a fancy, colorful uniform and a hat, and we'll dance around. If you want a society that will extend your life expectancy, if you want a society that will maintain levels of prosperity that are sufficient where a family can hold together and raise their children, you have to start looking at different cultures and picking and choosing between them and seeing which one is actually going to work, which one is most conducive to the objectives you want to achieve. And there's a bunch of cultures, and the government says, oh, let's respect them all. And I say, no, let's not. They're interesting. They're interesting. They may even be amusing. But if they can't generate a life expectancy comparable to what our culture can generate, tell them to buzz off. I'm not going to emulate that. I'm not interested in a shortened life expectancy and not to please anyone in their sense of culture. So, point. You got to look at culture. It's not abstract. It's the fundamental system of values that determines whether or not there's going to be an American dream. How many of you think the Muslim faith is conducive to an American dream? I guarantee you it's not. Muslim culture, in the final analysis, these people are caught, they have a faith that is practically medieval. And it's not an accident. They are prone to theocracies that will keep them in a primitive condition. Not primitive, I mean, they're trapped in a kind of culture, or at least they're significantly influenced and inclined to go to a kind of culture that is, we might have seen, it would have been unremarkable. Several hundred years ago, it's certainly not compatible with a culture like the American culture that believes in freedom and liberty, the pursuit of happiness. You're not going to find that in the Muslim culture. And yet we're supposed to sit back, oh yeah, bring some more Muslims in. Let's get some more Mexicans up here. It doesn't make any difference. They're just people. Bunk. They pack a culture with them. They bring their culture with them. And we allow them and encourage them to do so. I mean, one of the things, again, you want to file a government form, you better know English or know somebody who does. We shouldn't be operating in other languages other than the language of this country. We should not be encouraging other cultures to come in here and set themselves up. There have been talk about no-go zones for Muslims of the Sharia branch of the Muslim faith. They're thinking about setting up no-go zones. They've done it in Europe. You can't go into communities because they're dominated by Muslims. If you're not a Muslim, stay out. It's a no-go zone. How in God's name do we allow some foreign people to come in here and tell us, oh, you can't come into our town because we're Muslims? Let me explain to you, Sonny. This is our country. It's not yours. You don't tell me what cities and states I can go into. And if you want to try, maybe it's time to just pack your flying carpet and head back to Iraq, Iran, wherever. And we can arrange for transportation. We, American people, need to begin to learn to understand your own culture. We need to understand the values that made this country great. And then you need to learn to stand up and fight for them. Because if you won't, you are abandoning your children, your grandchildren, future generations to poverty, violence, tyranny. We're all headed in that direction while we try to be reasonable and liberal and fair and treat other people's cultures as if they're as valuable as our own. So, what's next, Melody?
You tell me. Where do you want to go?
How about here's one from Bloomberg. This surprises me because this is an interesting article insofar as they provide some good evidence, and they're talking about the price of oil. All right. This is a well-written, well-researched article. I'm not going to get to the whole thing, but a couple of key points. We'll do the three fundamental points there. But the headline is, get ready for $10 oil. They're talking about, they are anticipating that the price of crude oil could fall as low as $10 a barrel. Now, they have people that did the research for this article. They're intelligent, articulate, you know. They are aware of research that I'm probably not even close to being aware of. But still, you can look at the headline, get ready for $10 a barrel oil. There's a point to common sense here that just says, that ain't going to happen. At least not outside the context of some sort of extraordinary catastrophe. And yet here's the headline, get ready for $10 oil. I don't think that's going to happen, but nevertheless, here's some of the article. It says, at about $50 a barrel, crude oil prices are down by more than half from their June 2014 peak of $107 per barrel. They may fall more, perhaps even as low as $10 to $20 per barrel. Here's why. One, U.S. economic growth has averaged 2.3% since the recovery started in mid-2009. That's about half the rate that you might expect in a rebound from the deepest recession since the 1930s. Meanwhile, growth in China is slowing, is minimal in the Eurozone, and is negative in Japan. Throw in large increase in U.S. vehicle gas mileage and other conservation measures, and it's clear why global oil demand is weak and might even decline. All right, they're saying, first point, demand is down. And it necessarily so, because we are in something. We are in a global recession or perhaps even global depression. Demand is down, so the price should be falling. Point number two, at the same time, output is climbing, thanks in large part to increased U.S. Production from hydraulic fracking and horizontal drilling. U.S. oil, U.S. output rose by 15% in the 12 months through November from the year earlier based on the latest data, while imports declined 4%. Output supply is increasing. Demand is down, number one point. Supply is up, number two. Both of these are conducive to falling prices. Number three, the eroding power of OPEC cartel. Like all cartels, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries is designed to ensure stable and above market crude prices. But those high prices encourage cheating as cartel members exceed their quotas. Well, they argue that OPEC on November 7th said it wouldn't cut output, sending oil prices off a cliff because they're tired of dealing with the cheaters. Their implication, their conclusion is that OPEC is losing power and is going to tend to disintegrate. It may not absolutely disintegrate, but it'll tend to fall apart, and it's no longer as viable a force as it may have once been in international markets. Well, yeah, these are all good arguments, and they are true. But I'm still surprised by the idea that anyone would argue that the price of crude oil can fall from $107 a barrel down to $10 a barrel. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't seem possible, and yet Bloomberg, which is a respected source, Apparently, they believe it is possible. There's a little bit more from the article. While supply climbs, demand is weakening. OPEC forecasts demand for its oil at a 14-year low. Now, and they don't, and they have 28 million barrels a day in 2017. That's 2 years from now, maybe three. If OPEC is forecasting a 14-year low, 2.5, 3 years from now, they are implicitly forecasting that the global economy will continue to slow and slide deeper into recession and or depression over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. Now, that's interesting to me. We can wonder, is OPEC right? Is OPEC wrong? Is OPEC lying? Are they falsifying figures? I don't know. But they're suggesting that we've got 2 or 3 more years of falling oil production, which, you know, falling oil demand, which is consistent with 2 or 3 more years of global recession and or depression. That's interesting to me. What else have we got? That's the last thing. That's the last thing I want to talk about. No, one other one. Here, Wood Mackenzie, an energy research organization, last month, they did a study. They found that 2,222 oil fields surveyed worldwide, only 1.6% would have a negative cash flow at $40 a barrel. They mean that more than 98% of the oil fields surveyed, of 2,200 oil fields surveyed, they could still make a profit if oil fell down to $40 a barrel. I find that hard to believe. I mean, if that's really true, these oil producers were just making an extraordinary killing at $107 a barrel. They can produce the oil for $40 a barrel or less and get paid $107 a barrel. There hasn't been any meaningful competition in the oil industry. That's just pretty amazing to me. There are more statistics in the article, and I'm not going to get into them, but I think $10 and $10 a barrel. Hard for me to believe. What do you think, Melody? Are we going to have $10 a barrel oil, and what does that translate into price of gasoline? Are we back to 50 cents a gallon or something like that?
No, I think there's too many taxes built in the gasoline prices anymore to get down to that low of a level for gasoline. Okay. But when we were down at $10 a barrel, I mean, that was prior to the Iraq war, and it really started moving up, around that time, shortly before or after that, and it started going up. And when we were at these levels back in 2008, before it popped back up, I mean, right after it came off that top high of 140, you know, we had a big drop down to the 40, and then it clawed its way back up, and it's been hovering at, $100 at, since, 2011, 2012. You know, what's interesting is I can remember when oil was at $10, the big number that would destroy this country was $50 a barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's when, and when it got to 50, and that's where it was in 2006, 2005, that's where it was. Things were seemingly booming at that point in time because you had all that, everybody knows what was going on at that point in time. Subprime and all the debt that was being created. So, yeah. So it's, could we see $10? And yeah, I think we could. But is it that far off? Well, when you go back and we thought that $50 would be the end of the U.S. and it wasn't. So, look how they built up Dubai. It's all off of the oil prices.
Well, if it's
look
true
what they've done. I mean, my gosh.
If it's true we can fall from 107 to 10, then the whole market has been manipulated in a way that boggles the mind.
Yeah.
We're going to have to save this topic for another day. We're out of time. Melody and I will be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.